John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Wednesday, February 1st, 2012. Israel is named as the second most educated country in the world, and the UN Secretary General arrives for a series of Middle East talks. These stories and more coming up, so stay tuned. In a report by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, Israel has been named the second most educated country in the world, with 45% of its population having attained a university or college diploma. According to the report, the five most educated countries are listed as Canada, Israel, Japan, the United States, and New Zealand. In other news, Israeli authorities have indicted a West Bank couple who imprisoned the man's daughter for nearly 10 years. The girl, Barat Melem, aged 20, slept in a bathroom or another room, uncovered and on a blanket, and was only let out at night to do housework. She was finally rescued last month by Palestinian security forces, who arrested her father, Hassan Melham. The indictment was finally filed to an Israeli court yesterday, and Barat is currently living with her mother in central West Bank city of Ramallah. The current Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, has won the internal elections to remain head of the right-wing Likud party. With 85% of the vote currently in, Netanyahu has attained 74% of the vote, a decisive victory similar to the last vote held in 2007. Ban Ki-moon, the Secretary-General of the United Nations, started a series of talks with both Palestinian and Israeli officials on Wednesday by holding a meeting with Israeli President Shimon Peres in Jerusalem. He will also be heading to the West Bank city of Ramallah for further talks. His tour aims at convincing both Israel and Palestinian Authority in the West Bank to continue the exploratory talks that were held in Amman under Jordanian mediation and supervision. The talks did not lead to any breakthrough. A UN official said that the government, under Benjamin Netanyahu, must conduct what he called good gestures, so that the meetings can be resumed, and called on the Palestinians to resume the Amman talks. Education Minister Gideon Sa'ar has proposed to expand the pilot program currently operating in the Jerusalem district, in which high school students are taken on heritage tours to see Hebron. He wishes to make the program available nationwide, whereby schools can choose to send their students on a trip to the Tomb of the Patriarchs and see that, quote, a Jewish community has existed in Hebron for so many years, even when the people of Israel are all in exile. According to our faith, Jews will always remain in Hebron, unquote. The Israeli police cancelled a program recently, which would take high school students on a tour of Hebron, led by the organisation Breaking the Silence, a group which dedicates itself to collecting testimonies of soldiers who served in the West Bank. The program was cancelled due to pressure from right-wing settler groups. That's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Wednesday, February 1st daily roundup of news from the occupied Palestinian territories. We hope that you will join us again tomorrow. This has been brought to you by Hussam Qassis and me, William Gibson.
Israeli Tanya Rosenblit had a Rosa Parks moment when she got onto a bus in Jerusalem. The passengers were mostly ultra-Orthodox Jews who kept a distance from her following their practice of gender separation. One of the ultra-Orthodox passengers insisted she go to the back of the bus. Rosenblit refused, asking, "What's so horrible for a woman to sit in the front of the bus?" The December incident provoked a huge uproar in secular Israel, where many view the ultra-Orthodox, or Haredi, as a small sect far outside mainstream society. But the population of the Haredi has doubled in recent years and challenged the equity of the sexes in public places, major corporations, and even within the Israeli army. According to the Christian Science Monitor, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has condemned the segregation of women in public. In early January, the military's chief rabbi issued an order banning religious soldiers from walking out on official ceremonies where women speakers were present. Some Israelis worry that the growing numbers of the Haredi may undermine the core of the Zionist state because many ultra-Orthodox men refuse to enter the workforce, opting instead to devote their lives to religious study.
Afghanistan today. Another Afghan soldier shot and killed another NATO soldier. Afghan National Army Commander Syed Mullah confirmed the shooting, which he said happened during a night patrol in Helmand Province's Marja district. He said the Afghan soldier, who has been in the army for more than 2 years, claimed the shooting was an accident. These kind of accidents have been going on since Afghanistan was at war with the Soviet Union. Baghdad, Iraq, today. A roadside bomb targeting a police patrol wounded 3 policemen and 3 civilians in a Haritha district. Baghdad, Iraq, today. Qais al-Thashar, a member of parliament who left a Sunni-backed Iraqi political bloc recently, escaped injury when a roadside bomb went off near his convoy, wounding 2 of his bodyguards and 3 passers-by in the city's southeastern Amin district. Muqtadiya, Iraq, today. Gunmen in a speeding car killed a member of the government-backed Sunni Sabwa militia in the town of Muqtadiya, 50 miles northeast of Baghdad, according to police. The Sawa, or Awakening Fighters, are former insurgents who switched sides to support the U.S. in 2007 and have been regarded as traitors by Sunni insurgents ever since. In addition, Shiite insurgents consider them sectarian enemies, and there is evidence the Shiite-dominated government may agree. Baghdad, Iraq, Saturday. A U.S. helicopter made an emergency landing in the center of the city. Wait a minute. I thought the U.S. was out of Iraq. Oh yeah, there are still tens of thousands of U.S. mercenaries there, along with the largest U.S. embassy on Earth. Mr. Barack Obama, now's the time to remove so-called civilian U.S. forces from Iraq and the entire U.S. presence from Afghanistan. Bring all the troops, all the mercenaries, and everybody else home today.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
As police suppression of the Occupy Wall Street movement proceeded with evictions of activists from public spaces over the past several months, the movement has continued organizing protests, highlighting the issues of economic inequality, while targeting big banks and attempting to stop home foreclosures. In some cases, Occupy activists have employed direct action to reclaim public space lost, as happened in December when an unsuccessful effort was launched to occupy Duarte Square in New York City, resulting in some 50 arrests. On January 28th, Occupy Oakland activists used direct action tactics to take possession of a vacant city building that they plan to use as a community center and the movement's organizing hub. Oakland Mayor Gene Kwan ordered police to disperse thousands of Occupy supporters, which they did with tear gas, rubber bullets, and concussion grenades, arresting some 400 people, including journalists. In reaction, a small number of protesters entered Oakland City Hall and, as widely reported by corporate media, damaged a scale model of the building and burned an American flag. Even as Occupy activists across the country responded to the police crackdown in Oakland with solidarity protests, the National Park Service was threatening to close down two Occupy encampments in Washington, D.C. for what they said was violations of a no-camping ordinance. Your reporter spoke with Sandy Nurse, an activist with the Occupy Wall Street movement from New York City, who is currently on a 5-week bus tour of Occupy camps in the Northeast. Speaking from Boston, she talks about the police suppression of the Occupy movement in Oakland and the goals of the bus tour, which was organized to improve communications and relations between Occupy groups in advance of nationally coordinated actions planned for this spring.
We saw what was going on. We kind of followed the day as it unfolded. And I think there was a lot of just great disappointment and anger and frustration about how the police respond to what I looked at as an amazing, beautiful act. You know, people want to take over a huge vacant building in a community that is not being served by the state or local government and turn it into a social center with different services and a space for the community to be able to talk to each other and see each other and come to some kind of solution for their problems. I see that as a very beautiful thing, and the response to that, the very black and white contrast between those two approaches, is really enraged a lot of people. And getting on the phone call, we organized an inter-occupational call, which is different groups in different cities have established a telephone network, and we were able to hear directly from people on the ground, people in jail, what was going on, and it allowed us to be inspired to mobilize very quickly in response in solidarity with them. I know across the cities that I've been in, D.C., Boston, Philly, New York, it was no question. Oakland's under attack. Let's go. Let's make a response to this. I think it just shows how powerful that act was, that they tried, you know, what they tried to do, and they were open about it. You hate seeing people be repressed like that, so...
We're seeing a deadline by the National Park Police to get rid of all camping equipment and gear at the two encampments of the Washington, D.C. Occupy movement. This seems to be a continuation of the suppression we've seen of Occupy activists across the country for the better part of a few months now.
Right, right. And I mean, I think that the fact that it's coordinated with several federal agencies, the Department of Homeland Security, FBI, doing consulting work, I think it just shows the level of threat and how much, you know, occupation speaks power. It's really interesting. A lot of folks feel like these spaces were very, very important to bring a lot of different people together all across society. We don't take these opportunities in our daily normal lives to interact with each other in a way that's looking constructively at how our society is. And that's a huge threat to the state. Because it brings questions and it brings actions and it brings public rage. And the fact that they you know, did this, you know, citywide coordinated attack systematically to get rid of them is a very clear indicator of how powerful they are. And I think a lot of folks across different regions and across the nation are looking at reoccupying in the spring, better organized occupations, beyond occupations, but seeing that as a very powerful statement. And I don't think it as a tactic, it's over, because it's just so clear how powerful it was.
what is the overall goal of the bus tour? You talk about solidarity and strengthening the relationships between the Occupy encampments, but what would you like to see come out of the bus tour?
Well, on the one hand, it's serving as a trust-building experience that is kind of going to lay the foundations for a strong regional network that comes out in the next month. We're already talking about planning a regionally coordinated action in February. It's a coordinated action where we pick a target, we pick a time, we pick a place, and we do it. And we know each other, and we trust each other. We're also doing a lot of like exchanges of trainings, skill shares. There's outside of action, there's different working groups. For example, folks who are facilitators of general assemblies and spokes councils are like coming together and talking about the problems they experience in trying to facilitate direct democracy, whether through popular assemblies or even at the neighborhood local assembly level. And it's just amazing the similarities of issues that are coming out, but also the different tactics and strategies folks are using that can be shared and borrowed and replicated. So the goal is really just to learn and listen to each other and see how we can improve and grow as a movement as a whole. What's interesting when we talk about even planning actions, we look at, last night we did a solidarity march with Oakland that was coordinated among 28 cities. And literally that came out of Occupy Wall Street and Occupy Boston sitting in a room and saying, we need to do something. And then we just, coordinated this massive thing. And it's building that foundation to be able to mobilize very quickly. But it's also building and getting a sense of where people are. So it's just getting a sense of what exists out of each other's cities and using that to our advantage and looking to really build this network that will allow us to be more fluid and more mobile and more responsive as things, emerge and fall out over the next few months, especially in a highly volatile political year. So I see tons of great things that can come out of this.
That was Sandy Nurse, an activist with the Occupy Wall Street movement from New York City. Learn more about the brutal crackdown on Oakland activists and the Northeast bus tour by visiting our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.
On the 28th of January, Occupy DC took to the streets to challenge massive police barricades surrounding the Alfalfa Club. This is a drinking party for about 200 of the richest and most powerful people on Earth, named for the alfalfa crop's reputation as an extremely heavy water user or drinker. Attendees included President Obama and all of the infamous Bushes, all at the same time. Police barricades closed off most streets around the Capitol Hilton, the site of the party. K Street, 16th Street, and so many others were blocked with steel fencing, dump trucks full of sand, and hordes of cops looking like IMF and World Bank meetings 10 years ago. Occupy DC initially divided the action into North Group and South Group, each probing the defenses for weak spots near an assigned target. South Group scored first, finding the main checkpoint used by Alfalfa Club attendees. Senator Joe Lieberman, known as a Democrat in name only, got covered in gold and glitter as he ran the gauntlet of Occupy protesters. North Group joined South Group's position on K Street, reinforcing the blockades. During this time, a covert entry team managed to drop a banner from the Hilton itself, despite all that security. Eventually, a party guest started cutting through an alley to bypass the protesters, so a detachment of protesters broke off to choke off alley access. This group found themselves running from checkpoint to checkpoint. At one point in this, one of the cops called somebody a faggot more than once. Did I hear the word faggot from those cops? Yeah, I heard the word faggot.
This is to be ironic.
They sure are spending a lot of money to defend the damned alfalfa club. Did I hear the word faggots again? Motherfucking pig. Pig!
Hey!
Calling somebody a faggot? You got a big ass mouth, bitch.
Mike, check!
This one right here.
The cops over there!
Just one, baby.
Not everybody's on the horse.
Not everybody's on the
horse. All of them are friends.
Friends.
A faggot.
A faggot.
Walk the 21st century. It's okay.
When all the attendees were in, Occupy DC held their own party outside, waiting for the end when the Alfalfa Club guests would have to run the gauntlet again in reverse. At about 9:30 p.m., Occupy DC started marching around the perimeter, waiting for the guests to emerge. There were at least two assaults by police on this march, with cops pushing and shoving, and horses charging into the crowd and stepping on people. The police attacks were not effective in keeping protesters from challenging the Alfalfa Club's guests. Many of them emerged by the same KP checkpoint they entered by, only to find that Occupy coming back on the double and challenging them. Then the sound system fired up, while police on horses tried to protect the so-called nobles, at times giving the atmosphere of a joust.
Occupy, baby! Pay your taxes! Here we go again, horse charge! Get those animals off those horses! Again, police started shifting attendees from checkpoint to checkpoint, but protesters could circle faster than limos to penetrate the dense traffic created by all those streets the cops blocked off. There was one more incident of police brutality at 11:30 p.m. as another group of super-rich attendees found themselves confronted by protesters. For all the police brutality, there is evidence the police were ordered not to make arrests in a futile effort to keep the hard-drinking Alfalfa Club out of the press. After all, what happens if the U.S. president is drunk on his ass when something big happens? On Friday, the 27th of January, the National Park Service told Occupy DC that they would have to remove all camping gear and stop sleeping in the park by Monday, the 30th of January. They would be cited for camping, and all their camping gear would be stolen by the police. On Saturday night, 2 days prior to that deadline, they launched a 2 a.m. terror raid, supposedly looking for people with warrants, and arrested 3 people. The next day, they opened fire with a taser and arrested an activist for tearing down paper flyers announcing Monday's deadline.
I have done nothing wrong. 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 I have done nothing wrong.
He's not
I got you on the head.
No! What the fuck?
Tomorrow! Bring it!
Shit!
Fucking
shit!
Fucking
Yeah, it's a lawsuit,
what
brother.
Did
Don't
I
worry.
Do wrong?
It's a lawsuit, brother. You had your hands
Tell
up in the air.
Tell me what I'm being arrested for.
That's illegal,
Tell
too. That's another
I'm
lawsuit.
What is he being arrested for?
Nothing.
What is
I already got it. I already got it.
What is he being arrested for?
What is my disorderly conduct?
What is he being arrested
for? What is my disorderly conduct?
We ain't scared of you. Come tomorrow. Come tomorrow. We'll see you all tomorrow.
At high noon on Monday, the 30th of January, the deadline passed in defiance as Occupy DC draped the statue of General McPherson in a giant blue tent of dreams. About 1,000 people, including hundreds of journalists, were on hand. The cops took one look and retreated, sending only three cops into the park, and that for one stroll through in negotiations. While police tried to talk Occupy out of camping, Fox News parked their satellite truck across from Occupy next to a fire hydrant. Since Fox News always condemns Occupy and praises crackdowns on Occupy, Occupy protesters confronted the Fox crew and demanded that police tow the illegally parked truck away. As a Fox News van left with a ticket on the windshield, Occupy protesters cheered in victory.
We are Occupy! Our movement will never die! We are Occupy! Our movement will never die! We are Occupy! Our movement will never die!
I am the tigers, the cream of the fight, rising up to the challenge of our rival. And the last known survivor stalks his prey in the night, and he's watching us now in the eye of the tiger.
On Tuesday, the 31st of January, the Tent of Dreams was still standing, Occupy still held the park, and Fox News again was a factor. Instead of a police raid, in two separate incidents, right-wing terrorists, one armed with scissors, tried to topple Occupy's tallest tower by attempting to destroy the Tent of Dreams. In both cases, Fox News reporters were embedded with them, filming the attacks from right behind them. The attackers were confronted by occupiers and surrounded until police removed them from the park. But for Fox News to be able to embed with them raises a question. Did Fox recruit the attackers or the other way around? The Occupy DC General Assembly has now made an offer to the park police. Formally lift a ban on sleeping in the park, a ban now defied anyway, and the Tent of Dreams will go away. Until then, it will stand as a mighty tower of Occupy's resistance to the wealthy on K Street. The Eye of the Tiger. Occupy DC's got it. The park police do not.
January 20th marked the second anniversary of the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling in the Citizens United versus Federal Election Commission case, where the justices ruled that corporations and unions may give unlimited and anonymous donations to elect or defeat political candidates. In their decision, the High Court declared that corporations have the same rights as living natural persons. Since the ruling, corporations and wealthy supporters of political candidates have established dozens of so-called independent political committees and super PACs, where unlimited and unaccountable funds can be funneled into political campaigns so long as their activities are not coordinated with the candidate. In the Republican primary campaign thus far, nearly half the spending on campaign advertising has come from outside groups, mostly super PACs. This is in marked contrast to data from the 2008 campaign, where nearly all funds spent on TV ads came directly from the candidate's own committee. A growing number of citizens groups around the country have decried the Citizens United ruling for opening the floodgates to the corrupting influence of big money in politics. more than a dozen proposed amendments to the U.S. Constitution that would reverse the court's Citizens United decision on corporate personhood have been introduced in Congress. City councils in New York, Los Angeles, and other cities have recently passed resolutions in support of overturning Citizens United. Your reporter spoke with Bob Edgar, former six-term congressman from Pennsylvania, who now serves as president and CEO of Common Cause. Here he discusses the national grassroots campaign to overturn Citizens United and the consequences for American democracy if these efforts don't succeed.
The good news is that many good government groups are exercising what I call ego disarmament. Institutions have egos as well as individuals, and often many of the good government groups hurt themselves by focusing on a narrow agenda and not working together. Those of us who believe that one remedy to the Citizens United decision is a constitutional amendment, we've divided up the responsibility. Some of the groups have been working with city councils like Los Angeles and New York that have passed resolutions. Others have worked to just educate the general public. Common Cause has staff in 22 states, an organization in 37 states. And about a week and a half ago, we launched what is called amend2012.org. One thing we'd like to do is see if we can't get up on a referendum on those states that have that process, like Montana and Colorado, an initiative to push back on the Supreme Court stating that money is speech. We think money can stifle speech. Push back on the idea that corporations are people. We like corporations, but we don't think they should equate to people. And third principle that we want to work on is to pass the constitutional amendment that gives legislative bodies the right to control money in politics. We think this should be a nation that's of and by and for the people, and not of and by large corporations and the wealthy. Our friend Bill Moyers calls this the most dangerous moment in American history for democracy. We're either going to be a nation that's of and by and for the people, or of and by and for large corporations. As we saw in the last couple of weeks in the Romney and Gingrich campaigns, that super PACs, supposedly independent from the candidates, have been used to trash the other candidates. Millions of dollars have flown into these two super PACs. And it just points out that in this presidential year of 2012, money is going to flow in like we've never seen before. And average ordinary citizens are going to be overwhelmed by negative advertisements from corporate money and wealthy money. And Common Cause wants to push back on that. We believe there are several things that can be done.
Bob, the conventional wisdom is that coming to a successful resolution of a constitutional amendment is an extremely difficult task. What is it that you think is attainable here in this fight that sets apart the work to overturn Citizens United versus other efforts in the past to come up with a viable constitutional amendment?
Just because it's difficult doesn't mean we shouldn't go after it. We believe that it's important for citizens to instruct their House and Senate members to push for a constitutional amendment. And along the road, we hope that the Congress will get so much pressure that they will successfully pass, as we tried to do last year, something called the Disclose legislation, which would have forced corporations and the wealthy to fully disclose their involvement in politics. An unintended consequence of the Supreme Court decision is that foreign companies can now meddle in our politics, and that seems inappropriate. And we believe that full transparency of who is giving the money, in fact, should take place. So on the road to a constitutional amendment being pushed from the bottom up, we think there are other things like disclose legislation. And because the House and Senate in Washington couldn't pass it, we have operatives all across the country working in state capitals to get state governments to pass disclosed legislation. And we're asking state senators and state representatives to put resolutions in calling on their senators and their House members to go back and sort through the language and prepare a constitutional amendment that clearly states that money is not speech, corporations are not people, and money, in fact, can be regulated by legislative bodies. A Common Cause installed public financing in Arizona, Maine, and Connecticut, but because of the constitutional decisions of the Supreme Court, all of those public financing systems have to be voluntary, and there is no way to have mandatory controls on money in politics. And this presidential year is going to be the most moneyed election in our history. I believe many people are going to be offended at what they see over the course of the next 11 months, and hopefully the good news about that bad news is that people will be startled enough to stand up and help support this amend2012.org process that we've launched.
That was Bob Edgar, former six-term Pennsylvania congressman who now serves as president and CEO of Common Cause. Find links to groups organizing to overturn the Citizens United decision on our Between the Lines website at btlonline.org.